Hey everybody, good to be here with y'all. So this is kind of the second time I've drawn the short straw on this crew and ended up presenting this kind of this project, which has been a cool group to work with. So it's kind of headed up by a recently minted PhD out of Penn State, Amanda Ramtron, who's did a great job kind of wrangling this crew. And so we've been trying to work on improving the soil grids data set, but for the U.S. and doing it at 100 meter resolution. And you can kind of see the lineup here, quite a different mix of folks and institutions involved. And so I'm Travis Allman, and I'm with the U.S. Geological Survey Southwest Biological Science Center out of Moab, Utah. And so I'm going to be sharing this work on behalf of all these folks. And so kind of the main principles behind this project are that we want to kind of automate the soil mapping process, doing everything data-driven based on field observations. So the goal is to get the best unbiased predictions we can based on nonlinear machine learning models that we think kind of work for these type of data sets. We want to optimize the computational framework that we're working in, so try and parallelize everything where we can so that it's more reproducible on a more reasonable time frame. And we want this to be available for regular updates. So just wanted to highlight Amanda's work. So she just finished her PhD and is probably in the market right now, although she couldn't join us because she's in Tanzania on a project. So I would encourage you to check out her work. She just published a paper like on a soil app where there, I can't remember what the, there's some kind of crop parasite and they were able to like have people take pictures of leaves and identify it. Super cool stuff. So for this project, kind of the general scheme is there a pointer? All right. So kind of starting over here on the left, we put together a whole bunch of different kind of base layers that we use as environmental covariates to represent how we think soils might vary in space. And so that includes some stuff from Sirgo, where we did some gap filling of the parent material layer, and there was one or two others. I don't think Sky's in here. She might be able to fill in that gap. But then digital elevation models, I cover PRISM, MODIS, surface geology, Landsat bands, surface water to kind of mask out stuff in the end, the kind of coarse gamma radiometrics we have in the country. And then we also, after we kind of validated the model with this stuff, we included the Solar Grid's global 250-meter data set as covariates. So you do a bunch of stuff to get those kind of all talking the same language. Then we have a few different data sets we use to help train the models. Then you go through a prediction process. And then we came up with these different predictions for the conterminous US at 100 meters. And so, and we also are serving these up and hoping to make them more and more accessible, but they are all available online. So what data are we using? So we did some soil taxonomy predictions. Those are categorical models. So there's, you know, 300,000 observations in the U.S. So there's lots of data to work with for that, for categorical stuff. So the National Characterization Database from the NRCS for the properties, so about 38,000 pedons. Those have varying attribution of the actual properties that are available, so that it can be a little tricky depending on what property you're looking for. So kind of just thinking about the general iterative workflow, observations, covariates. We optimize kind of the modeling parameters to fit a machine learning model, fit values, takes with the network we're using about 15 hours for numerical properties, 28 hours for categorical layers. And then, you know, if we get new data and new covariates, then we can update that and run it again. So for this iteration, we have outputs for these properties. With EC, we're kind of looking, we didn't publish this because basically most of the eastern U.S. is saturated paste EC versus the west, where it's mostly 1-2 EC. But I'm working right now on a pedo transfer to try and put all this in the same language so we can do this across the country. We produce it, so using the 3D kind of modeling technique is where you throw depth in as a covariate. You can actually produce a prediction for any depth you want. So it's just whatever depth you want. But we produce it kind of in cahoots with the whole global soil map standards for kind of similar depth intervals. And then we have these two categorical data layers we produce, so great group and modified particle size classes, which is kind of from that family level attribution you get of soil observations. And so we've done some work in the Southwest kind of using that as kind of a base level to help predict ecological sites. And so we figured that would be useful. So all this is, if you want to check out how we did it, all the code, all the data, everything is up on GitHub. We encourage you guys to check it out, give us feedback. We all view this project as kind of open access. The more people that get involved, the better. So we encourage you all to do so if you're interested. So kind of going on that, so we just got the paper accepted for this into SSAJ, which is awesome. And so that paper will be open access along with, like I said, all the data, and I'll touch on that at the very end here. So kind of how well did this work? So this is comparing the 250 meter data from Tom Hengel, the global soil grids. So soil organic carbon, sand, clay, bulk density, pH, total nitrogen. So all kind of in the R squares of 0.6 to 0.8, which is real similar to the soil grids 250. And then with great group and particle size classes, cross-validated accuracy of 66%. So we're doing pretty good. There's definitely room for improvement, but there always is. So kind of summarizing that, average soil property R-score 72, mapping accuracy based on cross-validation 63%. And so we're thinking about, you know, this whole process of having all this data available from just the great legacy of the Cooperative Soil Survey in the U.S. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of uses for this, soil quality, land management, decision support, modeling. I mean, you know, I'm sure the, you know, folks in this room could come up with a whole grand list. so just thinking about what this data looks like and thinking about Surgo, thinking about, you know, like how do these, you know, all these different data sets compare to each other. So this is one example. You can't quite see all the map unit delineations as well as I hope, except for this big monster. So this is an area near Moab, Utah, where I do a lot of research, and it's actually one of our big kind of dust producing areas. We actually have a nice presentation on that on Wednesday in the soil and water management session. Really cool stuff if you're at all interested in dust. But you can see in this large map unit, we have a lot of different soil components, some better attributed than others. And one interesting thing about this area is, so this dark area where, so this is percent clay at 5 centimeters, this is where we get Manco shale outcrops coming out in that area. And so that's kind of in contrast to a lot of our sandier areas on sandstones. And so essentially, one of the interesting thing dynamics is we have a dominant southwest wind, so it blows this way up this canyon. And this is kind of a break in a topographical feature here. And so we get a wind, kind of a wind tunnel. And so this is all sandy soil. And so basically what happens is the sandy soil comes in and just sandblasts all this Manco shale, and we just get huge dust emissions in here. So this is an example where if you understand a little bit about dust emissions and a little bit about how sandy soils interact with finer soils, you understand that this is a big management situation. We also have a bunch of cattle watering tanks right here at this interface. We have super heavy grazing, and so we've had big dust storms that have caused problems on Interstate 70 and 191. So this is just a kind of an example on how, you know, seeing the variability within the map unit that you get out of the soil grids data can really help you plan for and mitigate real life issues. So just some more visualizations. So this is from SoilWeb, from Toby Ogeen and Dylan Budette, doing some summarization of Surgo StatsGo in the Bay Area. And so we have clay, and then you can see the soil grid stuff at the bottom. So you get pretty similar patterns. There was kind of an interesting discontinuity between the bulk density estimates that they got and then what we ended up plotting for that area. And the pH, there's some different stuff too. So there's still, you know, we still need to really look at all these different property maps that we're using and really make sure that, you know, they're representing reality. And I'm not saying which one's better, I just think we all just need to be aware of that. Well, the other thing that I've been playing a lot with is how to get interpretable transparent uncertainties, especially from categorical models. And so this is some work kind of relating the prediction probabilities you get for a hardened map using machine learning and comparing them to an independent set and looking at how the match rates you get when you compare that independent validation set to those probabilities. And so we're kind of getting these nonlinear trends where you end up kind of having a pattern of diminishing returns. And I've actually been working on this with cross-validation too. And what you get when you can better characterize this whole distribution is you kind of get this thing that does almost like a cumulative normal when you can characterize that distribution better. So that'll be some work that hopefully it can get out later this year, because it's thinking about, like Umakant was saying, we need to kind of understand how confident we are, and we can start to map this if we do it well, where you can see here greener areas you have more confidence in the bluer areas, so for every pixel you get that kind of some good estimate of how good that prediction is. And so future prospects, so I've been playing around with the Colorado River Basin above Lake Mead with the same training data, a 30-meter data set. So we want to do this for more properties. We want to better incorporate uncertainty. There's some really easy ways to do uncertainty when you do these machine learning models. And we want to do it at 30-meter resolution. So this is a little trial we did with EC, 1-2 water. And so at 30 meters, using kind of similar covariates, we can get really good estimates. And I've kind of done this for about 15 soil properties. And really the 3D modeling approach with these type of covariates, you can really start dialing in your mapping. And so then on the right is kind of building on some work by Kevin Vase. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right. And Felipe Lagacherie, and then which is based on Meinhausen's work using quantile regression forests. And so essentially, because especially for random forests, it's all bootstrapped anyway, so like you can basically build a prediction interval incredibly easily from them. And the nice thing about doing it in that route is you're not making all these assumptions about your probability distribution. And so when you're doing parametric statistics, you always have these like symmetrical, prediction intervals, which isn't really how the world works. And so with this, you're actually getting data-driven. So if you have one side of your prediction interval that's more skewed than the other, then you'll see that in the data. And so you can do really cool stuff. And so what we did here is I'm trying to think about how we make uncertainty more transparent and more interpretable for end users, right? So when you give somebody like a prediction interval, it's all relative to the units you're working in. So I'm thinking is, if we can normalize this so that we understand how wide that prediction interval is relative to the original distribution of the data. And so in this case, trying to do that with a 95 PI with regards to your 95% inner quantile region of the original data set. So basically, from anywhere from 0 to 1, it means you're constraining your prediction better than, that distribution. And then you get these red areas that are up higher. We're like, okay, we have no clue what's going on in Lake Mead. We're getting super high predictions. We know we have some data. We have super high EC. We don't really know what's going on. So this is a great tool, because if you normalize your predictions, then you can compare across your properties. So if you normalize your prediction intervals the same way when you're doing a bunch of properties, so we could take this and 10 other properties and look at areas where we're uncertain in all those properties and say, okay, we really need to go sample there. So it's a great planning tool. So super exciting work, I think. We just kind of last thoughts on this. We want to stress that this is not a replacement for Sergo and similar maps. It's another tool in the tool set. If you think about what Sergo is really good for, is we've done all this interpretation that's linked to component, and there's a lot of value there. But there's a lot of applications where we need better quantitative property values, our data. And just want to stress that, this is really highlighting just the vast amount of work that's been done in the soil survey. That's where this really comes from. And so I wanted to, this is a tribute to all the work that's been done by the soil survey staff and by the collaborative soil survey over the years. This is a ton of great data. And just stressing, this is an evolving project. We want everybody to get involved and try and make this better. We're really excited about some different crowdsourcing stuff. And this really, the idea for this paper came out of a land potential knowledge system meeting where Tom Hengel and I got to talking. And that's what that was all about. So you know, the more we can collaborate and do things together, the better as a soils community. And so just with that, if you guys want to play with this data, right now it's on the ScholarSphere site at Penn State. Check it out. It should be pretty easy to find. And with that, thanks for your attention. Shoot me an email if you guys have any questions or want me to get you in touch with the other collaborators on this. Thanks.
Any questions for Travis?
Greg? The answer is that yes, we need to build kind of more formal MOUs with folks. I think there was some momentum, and Tom was kind of had the capacity to just keep building, but then we really need to kind of come up with like a collaborative approach to handling all that, because I was trying to advocate at the cooperative soil survey meetings that, you know, the whole geospatial center of excellence should be a gathering point for all this data for the U.S. at least. And so I really think that that's where the leadership for this should fall personally, but I think there's still some capacity building that we need to do as a field to get all that centralized. So anything else?
Travis, I really like this stuff. It's really interesting to see how all of this data can be integrated into one platform. I have two quick questions. One is, you shared performance metrics for the property predictions.
Yeah.
How did you estimate those metrics? Is it some sort of cross-validation?
Sorry, I didn't mention that's cross-validation.
One quick comment on a property that I think is really critical and seems to be missing from this is soil depth.
Comment on those two. We didn't take a shot at that at 100 meters. Soil depth has always been one of the trickiest ones for people to model. You know, Tom took a shot at it and did pretty good at for the 250-meter data set for the global predictions. And so that's the best data I know of right now for soil depth is the global soil grids 250 meters. So I would check that out. They did a bunch of data mining of well logs, and they did a lot of work on it. So.